Welcome to the politicalbetting.com Polling Matters podcast. My name is Kieran Pedley. Well, it's just gone 6 a.m. on Wednesday, the 9th of November. And as we sit here now, Donald Trump is heading to become the president-elect of the United States in what is probably one of the most stunning of a series of stunning political events in the last year. It's fair to say that very few people saw it coming. Yours truly thought that the race would be somewhat closer than a lot of people were projecting, but I think it's fair to say that when you looked at the map and assumed that a Trump victory required a series of upsets in the industrial Midwest, although that was possible or plausible, the polling data and evidence that we had didn't seem to point to that. But as we sit here now, that seems to be what has happened. And to be honest, although we don't have a formal projection yet, as I sort of speak to you now, Trump leads by small margins, but by pretty convincing margins in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, to a lesser extent in New Hampshire, in Wisconsin, and some other states too. And ultimately, the idea that Clinton comes back from that is extremely unlikely. About an hour ago, I spoke to my fellow podcaster, Leo Barassi, and we sort of digested some of the implications of this result, both in terms of the sort of pollsters and political pundits that obviously got it wrong yet again, but also what happens next, because I think, as I mentioned, very few people thought that Donald Trump would be the next president of the United States. That seems to be what's going to happen, and the implications of that are far-reaching for America's future. Bear in mind that the House of Representatives and Senate are also Republican, but also America's role in the world as well, because we don't quite know what the US foreign policy is going to be under a Trump presidency. And in the context of the turmoil we see in Europe with Brexit and a French presidential election next year, and frankly, who would bet against Le Pen at this stage? There's lots to think about, and this next sort of 15 minutes or so is my conversation with Leo, and I'm sure in the coming weeks we'll be divulging into some of this stuff in a bit more detail. Do forgive me, it's 6:15, and here is that conversation. Well, I'm here with Leo Barassi, fellow podcaster, on what's been a very eventful evening/morning in the US presidential race. As it stands, I think I'll recap where we are and then get Leo's thoughts on it. It looks like we're heading towards a Trump victory. Donald Trump has won Florida, Ohio, and North Carolina, which we knew before today were a possibility. And perhaps not certain that he was going to take all three, but he has. But what's seems to be delivering the presidency for Donald Trump is a breakthrough in the so-called Clinton firewall in the Rust Belt, meaning the kind of industrial Midwest. And as we sit here now, we are still waiting on the results in Michigan and Wisconsin, which seem to be potentially decisive, especially Michigan with its 16 electoral college votes. There's also Iowa and New Hampshire, which could potentially be decisive depending on what happens in Michigan and Wisconsin. So we haven't, as we sit here now, we don't have a result, but the indications seem to suggest that Wisconsin will go Trump's way, and Michigan is on a knife edge. So I think it's fair to say that it is much more likely to see a Trump presidency now than a Clinton presidency, but that could change. So as we record, it is neck and neck to a large extent. So Leo, we've been watching the results this evening. Obviously don't know where we're going to end up for sure. But what's your take on it? Obviously very surprising.
Yeah, well, what we do know is that there has been another polling miss. I think one that feels quite reminiscent of last year's general election, perhaps slightly more than Brexit, in that I think the polls really this time had quite narrowly coalesced on a 4 or so point Clinton victory, in a way that they haven't so much with Brexit, where there was much wider spread. So we obviously don't know what the national numbers are going to end up doing, but it's clear that the state numbers are certainly looking tighter than they had in several of the swing states, and pretty much entirely in the direction of favouring Trump. So Virginia clearly was a state that we had generally thought that Clinton was going to win quite comfortably. He's ended up being quite tight. And then these Midwest states, Michigan and Wisconsin, were ones that essentially we didn't particularly think were likely to be in doubt on the basis of the poll numbers that we had before the vote. So I guess that raises the question of why. I mean, there's two obvious headline explanations for why they got it wrong. Either they got turnout wrong. So given that turnout seems to be quite high, I guess that would suggest that it's that the polls underestimated turnout of Trump supporters. So perhaps rural white voters seems to be a trend that's been coming up quite a lot in the county level results, seem like they're stronger for Trump than was expected in the rural areas.
It's very Brexity, isn't it? It feels like the urban areas going the way you'd expect, but not. So obviously in the UK, the urban areas went for Remain, but actually the wide margins that they went for Remain weren't enough to transcend, I mean, not just rural, but the rest of the country, if you like. And it feels there's similarities, at least, there's parallels there in some of these states.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I guess the other possibility is that there's this shy Trump effect, whatever that means, and however that plays out with the polling. Mm. Essentially, there are people who in principle weren't honest with the pollsters. I don't know about that. I don't know how true that is and exactly what the mechanics of that were. I suppose it feels a bit more like it's a turnout question, and again, slightly different people are turning out than was expected.
Mm. I mean, we talked about this. I mean, people that are tuning into this morning will rightly criticise us, I think, and other sort of pundits and experts in the industry, whether it be the media or polling or other things, as to why yet another election campaign has gone against what the conventional wisdom said. I mean, I feel I want to defend that a little bit as we sit here now. And we don't know yet. We don't know who's going to win the presidency. It does seem like it's going to be Trump. But frankly, even if it is Clinton at this stage, there's clearly been, it's clearly worked out differently to what the conventional wisdom was. I think when we sat here last week, we were very clear that the polls suggested, as you mentioned, that the path for Trump was narrow, and it seemed to hit a brick wall in this Midwest, as you mentioned. And, you know, there was no evidence, really, that Trump was going to break through that wall and win in places like Michigan and Wisconsin. And again, if he hasn't yet, but if he does, that's what's going to deliver in the presidency. So I guess for me, if I'm looking at it, we have to look at what's gone wrong there what lessons can we learn in the US and the UK. And for me, the lesson I've learned this year, and as we speak here now, Michigan is now 48-47 to Trump. He leads by 30,000 votes with 59% of the vote counted. So still up for grabs. But as I sit here, I think that the big lesson I've learned in 2016 from a polling perspective is that modelling the electorate is, you know, it's obvious, but it's the number one challenge. And I just don't know whether public polling can do that well enough, given the lack of resource it has, to pay for that sort of investigative work that you need to do to be able to achieve that. A lot of public polls are done cheaply for media organisations, and they're done by very clever and intelligent people. But ultimately, to do the large-scale modelling that you would need to do of the electorate, to take that big data approach to who's going to show up, requires investment, and I just wonder where that investment exists. And that said, if it does exist in private electoral campaigns, we didn't hear anything from the Clinton campaign suggesting that they were nervous, although I guess in hindsight I wonder whether we're going to read an article in the next few days that suggests that she was in Philadelphia the night before the election for a specific reason, that she was concerned about that area and was told to be concerned rather than just happening, you know, to be there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to be sort of critical of, again, of the conventional wisdom being wrong. There are a lot of people that I respect and know well who were
firing out very similar electoral college maps overnight, with excuse me, with Clinton on sort of 320, 330 electoral college votes. But I suppose the challenge there, isn't it, is that you either go with the polling data or you don't. So you can go with your hunch or you can go with the data that's available. And if the quality of the data that's available isn't good enough, then that's obviously something you've got to deal with. But otherwise, you're guessing, aren't you?
So I suppose there's two things that are on my mind with this. I mean, the first is the point you've touched on there, which is polls obviously have a certain margin of error to begin with, but that's typically only a couple of points for polls with a large sample. But there's also a separate inaccuracy that has to be accounted for, that we have to recognise that, as you say, modelling your electorate is difficult. I think what we've seen in this election and in the EU referendum perhaps as well was generally an overconfidence about the accuracy of polling on quite fine margins. And you know, I think this is a point where 538 deserve credit, that over the last couple of weeks they've been getting a lot of stick for continuing to say that it was quite uncertain and that it wouldn't take a complete shock and an unprecedented inaccuracy in the polling in order for Trump to win. And it feels like...
Nate Silver was saying that, but I think the rest of the team were pretty...
Well, sure, perhaps he was leading the team against their will, but you know, certainly they stuck to the line that...
And that's credit to Nate Silver, by the way.
Yeah.
But the rest of his team seemed to be quite bullish.
Yeah, sure. But you know, anyway, there was generally a groupthink around the polling, and, you know, that's something that... analysts, and I absolutely include myself in that, have to get around and recognise that essentially the error is slightly wider than we sometimes want to think. So I think that comes in when you're looking at elections that have got quite fine margins, which typically is the case for most national elections. So obviously that is a major problem. I do, though, think, sort of second point, that it's worth separating polling of elections and other uses of polling. So, you know, if we're looking at questions like who do you think is the best prime minister at the moment, I don't have numbers in front of me, I can't remember them exactly, but, you know, it might be something like 60% is Theresa May and 15%, 1/5 is Corbyn. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, that is not something that is affected by margin of error and other inaccuracies. You know, there are plenty of other uses of national polling that you can have that's completely separate. And I think what we saw after the last UK general election, when it got it wrong, was a lot of criticism for the pollsters for things that I completely agreed with, which is, you know, they got it wrong by enough that it made a crucial difference to who they thought was going to win the election. But then that spilled over to a lot of criticism that I didn't agree with post-election analysis of, for example, why Labour lost. That got a lot of people saying, well, what do the polls know? You know, look how they got it wrong. And I think, you know, people shouldn't be confusing polls that are getting it wrong by a couple of points here and there with polls that are saying there's a sort of 30-point difference between this thing and that thing.
Voting intention is about human behaviour in a future election.
Yeah,
and
who's going to turn up and stuff.
Who's going to turn up? Are they going to do what they're telling you? Whereas public opinion is, well... It's a static moment in time, and it's also something that you don't never really have to validate, so it's a temperature you're taking. And I suppose if it's a large margin, like you say, with Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, perhaps, that or with which issue you think is the number one issue facing the country, then you can be reasonably confident of that. Let's move on briefly and talk about what we think the implications might be generally for this vote. Obviously, you know, Trump being president has so many implications we'll probably discuss on another day, if that is what actually happens. But I mean, what are the lessons to be learned sort of politically? I mean, I feel like there's a very obvious situation that we're going to face where I think the left will look at this in America and say, the Bernie Sanders supporters will say, look, we told you before this race that actually in hypothetical horse race polling, dare I use polling again, Sanders would absolutely trounced Trump, whereas Hillary Clinton was more neck and neck. We told you that, and yet you told us that Bernie Sanders was the unelectable one. but Clinton won the nomination and subsequently perhaps has gone on to lose. And that will only embolden that wing of the party, won't it? And I suspect it will, by proxy, do the same here, although the context is different because people will look at it at Labour moderates and say, well, look, we need something completely different in Jeremy Corbyn to inspire people. There is evidence you can inspire non-voters on the right, clearly, with Brexit vote and perhaps in certain areas of the US. Maybe we can do that in the UK on the left too. That debate's clearly going to come up, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, let's be clear that Clinton won the nomination not because of some party stitch-up and some undemocratic process. You know, she won the nomination with a large majority of voters. You know, it was a comfortable victory amongst a very large number of people. But the Trump victory was to a substantial extent based, or Trump victory as it seems likely to be, and apologies if you're listening to this and Trump victory is not the right term, but it seems like that's going to be the case, is based on a lot of people voting for Trump because they wanted to stop Clinton rather than enthusiasm for Trump. That feels to me... I mean, look, Clinton's politics are not especially different from Obama's. This isn't a case that people were desperately wanting a radical leftist candidate and they were only offered something centre-left and they were disappointed. I mean, it feels like their opposition to Clinton was overwhelmingly... There was certainly a significant extent of sexism about it, and this obviously bleeds into lots of other factors, but a lot of it was... They saw her as the candidate of the establishment and an insider and not someone who would stand up for their interests. And, you know, that, I feel, is the real problem that they and the centre-left in general have, being seen to be the political wing of the elite rather than a organisation to represent the majority of people. And
we see that in the UK, don't we? I mean, the version of that in the UK is that the left is the... I mean, it's a bit more complicated than this, but the left is like the agent of the European Union, maybe, or the way that the economy has run for a long time.
Yeah.
It's like an establishment thing. I don't know if the left is the right phrase there.
Yeah, but it's sort of... It's the metropolitan left,
you've right? told us how to think on certain issues.
Yeah.
Immigration being the obvious one. And I mean, I'll be completely frank with this. I don't know what the answer to immigration is, but it seems very obvious to me that whoever wins the presidency tonight... And however, whatever happens in British politics, there is a problem on the West between elites and non-elites. Immigration is a huge part of that problem. We can't ignore it. You know, I think that there's a lot of people, particularly on the left, that will say, no, no, we shouldn't ignore it. Let's engage with the issue. I don't know what engaging with that issue means. It certainly doesn't mean pushing back and saying, oh, well, we're not going to address this, like Jeremy Corbyn is saying. We're just going to allow open borders and we're going to win the argument and that sort of thing. I think that there's more than enough evidence now with Brexit, with the performance of Trump tonight. It looks like it possibly will win him the presidency. The French presidency next year. I mean, who on earth would bet against Marine Le Pen right now?
Yeah.
I mean, look, different countries, of course, but we are seeing a consistent trend in the Western world that there is a sort of anti-elite movement manifesting itself around the salient issue of immigration, but also sort of economic, you know, empowerment, I guess, that's a horrible academic wording, but you understand what I mean. And the left has to have answers to that. And I think, you know, my solution to that will be different to other people's, but I think ultimately my view is always that horrible word of triangulation. But ultimately that means that the left has to find an answer to these questions that moves the debate onto areas where it's more comfortable. So what I mean by that is, have an answer. The left needs an answer to immigration which conveys the image of control and fairness in the system, which can mean lots of different things, so that it can move the argument onto economic issues that it's more comfortable on. And I think if it doesn't do that, we have several examples now of empirical evidence where if it refuses to do that and refuses to engage with that issue, the right will, in very unpleasant ways, and they can win. And it's not a case anymore that of pointing at them and saying you're racist, even frankly with Donald Trump when they are. you're going to end up in an unpleasant place. So I hope that the left can find answers to that solution, to that question in the next few years. And I'm not saying just acquiesce completely, but there needs to be a way of trying to meet the public where it is rather than where you'd want it to be. I mean, right now, as we're talking, Michigan looks like 81.1 to 46.8 for Trump, and Wisconsin 49.3 to 45.6 for Trump. So,
both now with a majority declared.
Really hard to see how Clinton comes back from this. To be honest, it feels a lot like Brexit. I mean, we're sort of calling this, recording this podcast as we see results still come in. But it feels like it's wishful thinking rather than anything else, doesn't it, that Hillary Clinton can come back from this?
Yeah, I think so. The massive failure, and you could see it in the first debate, really, the first half an hour is, even on topics that should be the Democrat strength against a Republican who wants to cut taxes for the rich, the Democrats are struggling to speak to ordinary people in the language that matters to them, that works for them on the issues that matter to them. So, you talked about immigration, but, you know, it's about, and I completely get that economic insecurity is not the driver of Trump's support, or not the prime driver, and that, you know, there is a huge amount of just pure racism going on and sexism. But it was I really felt that Clinton has failed, and Labour in the UK is failing to speak to people in the language that says that we get that you're worried about your jobs and growth, and you don't feel like you're benefiting and where the country's going.
I mean, sorry to interject, but I mean, I know you're not saying this, but I really do grate at when you hear this argument that says, "Oh, it's misogyny, it's racism, it's this and that." That is obviously a huge part of Trump's appeal. I mean, frankly, I'll be completely straight with people. I can understand the arguments behind Brexit. I wavered with the issue myself before voting Remain. Brexit empowered some very unpleasant people, some very dishonest people, and I can understand why people are angry about it. But I think there are perfectly rational reasons behind supporting it that are perfectly legitimate. The way Donald Trump's behaved over the last, 18 months or so, I just find it really difficult to sort of appreciate or to accept. We talked about shy Trump voters earlier, and that probably be something that's dismissed. Where I think that possibly is true is in Republican voters that said to pollsters that they weren't going to vote for Trump. Maybe they were going to vote for Johnson, or maybe somebody else, who actually decided to vote the party line in the end. That's something that I think is worth exploring. We're speculating. I fully appreciate that. But if we're looking at shy Trump voters, I'm not necessarily talking about Reagan Democrats, although I'm sure there's a bit of that going on. I'm thinking of those people that either weren't reached, as you said, or maybe were Republicans that didn't say they were going to commit to him. I mean, final word before we close, as it is fairly early in the morning. What are we at? Sort of 4:30 or something?
It's later than that.
Later than that? What is it?
It's 10 to 5.
10 to 5. Excellent. Time flies when you're having fun.
Party on.
Party on. So briefly on this country's, the implications on, not on Brexit, but on the American side. If it is a Trump presidency, there's going to be a lot of people in Whitehall rewriting previous statements and sort of trying to finesse what we've been saying as a country diplomatically. I mean, I suppose Cameron's gone. Because let's face it. This is the president of the United States.
The world is going to have to rewrite. I think there had developed an unprecedented acceptance that it was okay for world leaders to say that Trump was not acceptable.
Because I didn't think he was going to win.
Yeah, of course. I think I even heard informally that some US embassies were issuing clarifications on some of Trump's statements, essentially saying that he didn't speak up for American values, which, you know, is the kind of thing that would normally be unprecedented. It's not just here. There's going to have to be a lot of people who, I don't know, I mean, they're not going to be rowing back. I'm sure, you know, Sadiq Khan, for example, who has clearly been absolutely explicit that he wanted Clinton to win, he's not going to be saying, you know, Trump, you're welcome here.
I suppose the one person that hedged their bets on this was Theresa May, wasn't it? I think she wished both candidates good luck the other day.
Theresa May does like hedging her bets.
That's true. Probably a nice place to end this podcast. that's all we've got time for this sort of emergency podcast. Emergency feels like the right word. We haven't got the result yet, but as we stand here now, as we sit here now, Wisconsin is 49.3, 45.5 to Trump of 72% declared. Michigan, I think that's 62% declared, 48% Trump, 47-ish for Clinton. Salvageable, but I find it hard to believe. It looks like Donald Trump's going to be the next president-elect of the United States, and there will be plenty to cover in the coming sort of weeks and months. Also looks like, I think, that he's going to have the Senate and certainly the House, probably the Senate as well.
And therefore the Supreme Court.
And there, well, yes, some form of the Supreme Court. So let's see. I mean, it's going to be, it's astonishing. I mean, this is democracy, folks, warts and all. I mean, we keep saying that this year. Let's see what he does with it. And, you know, I take no pleasure in watching the first black president of the United States show a man who queried his birth certificate around the White House. I make no apology for being critical of that either. But we're having New Hampshire numbers come up now as well, 48.5 to 46.4. Very hard to see how Clinton wins the presidency from here. And I suppose in the next coming weeks we'll be picking over the implications in the coming weeks and what happens in politics thereafter. So Leo, thanks for your time this evening. It's been a pleasure as always. And join us for more episodes, as I say, in the next week or so.